a society teach you to be what you are on the outside. They teach you that, you know, I'm the Nike here, I'm the Clark and I, I'm that, you know, Balenciaga, you know. But Rastafari teach you that you don't need none of that stuff to be confident. You don't need none of that stuff to exist. You don't have to be a part of that to feel special because you were born special. So the difference between Rastafari and society is that society teaches you about what is on the outside of you. And Rastafari brings you on the inside. Man, know thyself. Because if you don't know what is in you, you can't know where to go. So Rastafari is really about discovering the treasures within self.
You are now part of a social experiment.
See now where my limit is. Only God knows. It's like they just wanna see you struggle. I swear they don't wanna see you shine.
They don't.
It's like they just want you to bleed and they want you to fall. They don't want you to be where the streets are paved with gold.
Welcome to Mastermind, the home of Black excellence and self-mastery. Yes, your host, Mr. G.
Welcome to the program. Thank you for joining us today on the journey towards self-mastery. Our next guest hails from Jamaica. He's an artist, an entrepreneur, and a Rastafarian. He's author of The Activation of the Better Self. He aims to spread positive vibes through his voice and his sounds with the rest of the world. Let's welcome today, Mr. Ross Stimulant. Ross, how you doing today, man?
Come on, I'm doing great, man. I'm doing great.
Man,
thank you for having me on, you know.
Pleasure.
Thanks to all going to see this video.
The pleasure's mine, man. The pleasure is all mine. I was really inspired listening to you, you know, through YouTube. We wanted to kind of bring a Rastafarian on the program to kind of spread those vibes and the philosophy. And I think, you know, Rastas have a really interesting, you know, philosophy and understanding of the world that a lot of people don't look into, man. So I kind of wanted to get an opportunity to talk with somebody who is really deep into the culture. So I find out about you through I Never Knew TV. So shout out to I Never Knew TV.
Yeah, man. Thanks to June and I Never Knew T, man. Great people.
Yeah, man. So I'm like, I gotta get Ross on, man. So connected with you and everything, and here we are, man. So you are a bit of mystery, man. I'm like, I was trying to look, you know, and see some of the things that I could find about you, but it's just, you know, the music and then some of the things that you've mentioned from I Never Knew TV. And I'm like, I really wonder about this dude, man, like what his life was like as a youth, you know what I'm saying? Like growing up and everything. So if you can start off by sharing with us, man, like just what some of your experiences in Jamaica growing up were. And
growing up in Jamaica, it makes you smart, it makes you strong, and it makes you resilient. Life in Jamaica as a child, you know, is also there's a lot of hardship in Jamaica. That's the first thing. I'm not going to tell that, you know, it's paradise. Yeah, the place is paradise because we got the beach, we got the spring water, we got the birds, the rivers, the trees. Yeah, that is paradise. That's the land. That's the place. But in terms of living, it's, you know, it's a hardship for most of the people. A lot of the people are, you know, some of the people are in poverty, some just coming out of poverty. And then we have some baby boomers. As a child growing up in Jamaica, it was a bit adventurous for me. I didn't really grow up my parents. I grew mainly like with my grandmother and moving, you know, from stranger to stranger, which would be family, friends, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I grew up. I basically grew up having a mindset of my own. I didn't have my father. I spent some time with my father. And I spent some time with my mother, but they didn't spend enough time with me to indoctrinate me the way they have been indoctrinated through institution and systematic programming. So I basically grew up with a free mind, with the ability to think about things that most child wouldn't get a chance to think about. Growing up, it wasn't about having toys or having clothes and shoes. You know, that was far from my imagination. I was more like wondering about the stars and the plants and the animals and the rivers and the land and, you know, having a lot of dreams, you know, and I'm still a dreamer, you know, I'm still high on life, you know, you know, growing up in Jamaica, it was an adventure for me.
Got you. For those that are not really familiar with Jamaica, what is the environment from, like, I guess, growing up to where we are now with Jamaica?
It's a predominantly, I don't like to use the word black, because there's no such people as black. You know, we have Nubians, we have Kushites, we have people from the continent. But it's, you know, I'm going to use the word too, so people can know what I'm talking about. It's predominantly black, a patch of white, you have a patch of Chinese, you have a patch of Indians, because that's how we describe them. We don't say Caucasian, we say the white man. And we say Chinese, and we say Indians. Yeah, but it's predominantly people from Africa. In Jamaica, I see it is a systematic brainwash, and it's a systematic struggle for the people, you know, the people of color, as they call them, black people. I see like them have them as the less or the lesser among the rest of the people. So growing up in a situation like that, you know that things don't come easy. You know, sometimes your mom don't have the food to prepare a proper meal so you can be properly nourished, you know. I grew up on eating mangoes, almonds. I grew up basically on eating fruits because I was always out in the wilderness, always out there seeking adventure down by the river, learning how to swim. Even though I grew up with friends, I didn't have a lot of friends because I was always moving. I was always moving from one point to the other point. So I didn't really get that chance to connect with certain people. And I was always on that mission, moving from one point to the other point. So I didn't get that time to connect to say that, well, I grew up with these guys or I grew up with them. I grew up with nature being my friend, with the universe, the stars, the moon, and the sun being my friend. The fruit tree and the water by the river, you know?
I got you. So did you develop kind of your own philosophy before you got into Rastafarianism, or was that both interconnected?
When I was a youth, I was mostly familiar with Rasta because, you know, Rasta in Jamaica is a positive vibe for younger people, you know, for the younger, what they would call them adolescent or the juvenile, you know, a lot of them gravitate towards Rasta because Rasta don't have that negative vibe. Rasta more take it in, or Rasta more quicker to teach you something. So by being around one and two, I wouldn't say a lot, you know. I wouldn't say they have influenced me because it's just an inbound concept. Rastafari comes from within. No one can influence you to be Rasta. It's looking in the world. It's like I'm saying, okay, I'm at this point. What character could I use to go through this point? You know, you got violence over there. You got negative over there. You got that over there. So I say, okay, what character do I need to choose to get through this? You know, so by being away from the systematic programming, and I didn't go to school until I was like 10.
Really?
So I didn't grow up. I was born in a house. I didn't born in a hospital. So I didn't get that vaccine. So it caused me to move different and think different. My mom said I was a wild child, you know? Yeah, you know. I didn't grow up the way that everyone grew up. And that is just to say that the universe had a plan for me from that young age. I was always outspoken. I was always someone to be seen, whether doing the right or the wrong.
So yeah, Raz, at 10 years old, you're going to school for the first time, man. Like, what was that experience like, and how were you treated in school?
All right, put it this way. So I had a chance to go to America, at a young age, at the age of 10. Being in America, I didn't know how to read. I was fully illiterate as it relates to the institution. In nature, I was fully adequately educated. Because I would even say it's education. You get knowledge from nature. You get education from school. Study ration is what you do in nature. And study ration is better than education. Education is a bunch of information that's in an institution. Study ration is looking at the mango tree and saying, okay, I planted this tree, let me watch it. And I see go through the four seasons. Then I say, okay, every summer it's going to bear. And it's a fact, every summer it bears. That's study ration. So you get real knowledge from study ration. Education is like a hypothesis of ideas, you know, a well-suggested idea, you know, or something like. Yeah, so not knowing how to read, going to school, it was interesting. There's this teacher by the name of Miss Wolf. She came from Russia, and there's this Russian lady, and she was always like, I see something special in you. I said, like, maybe it's something special in me, you know, like, I see something special in you. And she said, you know, because being in the classroom, not understanding what is on the paper, not knowing what to do. She's like, okay, I see something special in you. Even though I didn't know what was on the paper, she was like, you come to me after class, I'm going to show you what's up. So every day after class, I go to Miss Wolf. And Miss Wolf eventually taught me how to read. Mm. When I learned how to read, the classes that I was in, I was like, boop, boop, boop. I went through those classes like quick and fast. The way she taught me, I was able to advance quicker than the rest of the students.
Mm.
Yeah, that's what I'd say. So, you know, after I learned, maybe it took me like 6 months to learn how to read and write.
Mm.
And after that, it was like a ball rolling, you know. I was like soaking up a lot of information.
Got it, got it. So did you stay in the United States for a while after that? Or when did you, like, how did the transition from heading back to Jamaica?
Well, as you know, America is the home of the free. You feel like you can do what you want, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Most of my family live there, but, you know, my mom and my dad, because my mom was in, like, Jamaica, and my father was in America, so they stopped, you know, the relationship was over. So I'm like, yeah, I want to go to my mom, you know. It's like, okay, you're giving trouble anyways. That's how it went, you know. And from then, I never attempt, you know. I just leave it there, you know.
How old were you? And then what kind of trouble was your dad talking about?
I was 16, man. It wasn't no big trouble, man. I was just small trouble. You know, I was only 16, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
16, you know. And the education that I got in that short space of time, it took me from then till now. Because I've never been to any other institution as a child to get any formal education.
That's fascinating.
I kind of educated myself because I had the means of how to do it.
Hmm.
You know, the teacher taught me how to teach myself. So Miss Wolf, respect to Miss Wolf, that Russian lady.
Got you. So all right, walk us through once you get to Jamaica, man. What was going on at that point?
In Jamaica, coming back to Jamaica was a bit different, you know, because you know, being in the States give you a different perception of life than being in Jamaica, which they classify as a third world country. Mm-hmm. And as I said, while I was growing up, things were kind of harsh, you know. Coming back at 16, coming from America to Jamaica, I had to make a lot of adjustments. Nevertheless, I resumed where I left off, went back to nature, you know. I didn't, as I said, my mom, you know, for some reason, I had a mind of my own. I rented my first room when I was like 16 plus. Got a job with a lady from Canada. They came and they opened a store named Seagull Pewter down in Senton. And from there, you know, I got an idea of what society was about. So, you know, I said, well, let me go try to help myself. And from there, I've been helping myself till now.
Got it. So
tried many things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Tried many things, you know. Started a lot of stuff. Stopped a lot of stuff, you know. And one thing I realized from all of this, you know, you can really be who you want to be if you have that state of mind. But growing up in a place where the notions are not as is, like there's a difference between Jamaica and America. In Jamaica, you know what time it is. In America, you think that everything is okay. It gives you a false sense of being, you know. Mm. It gives you a different ego than, you know, it gives you, it's like, when you watch the TV and see the rappers, you think that they're really billionaires. But when you go and see them, they're not so rich. And it's the same thing with Jamaica and America. When you look at America, it's like, oh, everything is okay and everything is fine. But it's not really that way. But in Jamaica, when you look, you're like, okay, things are not fine. You know, you don't have to pretend.
That's
the difference between Jamaica and America. So I had to find a way to fit in, cut my groove. And I was on my way.
So at what point did you fully become Rasa? Was it an experience that you had or anything?
Within that same time, you know, because I felt so free, you know, I didn't even know when it happened. I just found myself like, damn, where did that come from? You know, as I said, I grew up feeling free. And as you mature, like a cocoon becoming a butterfly, you know, you just feel free. So, you know, the medium of being totally free is Rastafari. Mm. So, you know, you're a free person when you're Rastafari, because you're not limited by thoughts, you're not limited by the things around, and you're not intimidated by this institution and this, you know, system of colonialism, because that's what it really is, you know.
Gotcha. So walk us through Rastafarianism. I've heard from people that it's a religion. I've heard it's a philosophy. I've heard it's spirituality.
It's not a religion. It's the highest point of oneself as it relates to total expression of an original person in the sight of the universe and the presence of life and nature. It is a total expression of self, you know, from within to without. And society teach you to be what you are on the outside. They teach you that, you know, I'm the Nike here, I'm the Carcana, I'm that, you know, Balenciaga, you know. But Rastafari teach you that you don't need none of that stuff to be confident. You don't need none of that stuff to exist. You don't have to be a part of that to feel special, because you were born special. So the difference between Rastafari and society is that society teaches you about what is on the outside of you, and Rastafari brings you on the inside. Man, know thyself, because if you don't know what is in you, you can't know where to go. So Rastafari is really about discovering the treasures within self.
Got you. So what about the connection with Haile Selassie?
The connection with Haile Selassie, you know. Haile Selassie is, when most people hear the word Haile Selassie, they're thinking about the emperor from Ethiopia. Mm-hmm. But Haile Selassie is the power of all things coming together. They say the Trinity is the power of the Trinity. Most people have their definition of what they think the Trinity is. But in my eyes, you know, it's man knowing himself, being where he is, connecting to the higher power. It's like I'm standing on the ground, I'm getting my knowledge in the environment, and then I'm connected to something greater than I am, which is the universe. The universe, man, and the earth. That's what I see as a Trinity. Because you need yourself, you need the earth, and then when you connect to the earth connect to the universe. So that's what I see as the Trinity. So Haile Selassie to me is not really the person who is the emperor. It's knowing that there's a connection between you and that earth and the universe. That's such a part of alignment.
Got you. So walk us through, you know, the locks. Like a lot of Rastas, they grow their hair and they don't cut it. What's the idea behind that?
Well, to tell the truth, you know, as I said, to be total in who you are, you'd have to be able to accept yourself as is. And man, without the influence of society, this is how you're going to look. Without the scissors, without the comb. This is how everyone would look if they weren't beautified by society. So the locks is really, even if you don't have locks and you have hair, it's the antenna that receives the frequency from a higher place. The hair now, the hair is different with the comb and the brush. Without the comb and the brush, it has that natural curl that swirls, that's able to trap certain electrons and neutrons. If the hair is straight, it can't trap anything. So a part of our being and how we receive thought has something to do with our emotions and our hair collecting electrons and a neutron, because after all, we are an electric being. Our electric cars really is nothing new, you know, because we are totally electric.
I got you. Okay.
So our locks help us to pick up a higher frequency. That's why we don't brush it and we don't comb it. The people that comb and brush, their frequency is lower than the people that don't comb and brush. So even if a person is not saying Rastafari and they have locks, they're able to pick up a higher frequency than those that brush and comb and those that cut. The people who beautify themselves by cutting and shaving, they haven't really seen themselves yet. If they knew what they were doing, they wouldn't do it, because they're really breaking their connection to them greater self. Yeah, so that is what it represents. The locks represent the connection between man and the universe. And your feet represent the connection between man. That is why it's on our head, because it connects to up there. And that's why our feet are down there, because it connects to the earth. Did the feet connect to our creator? Because man couldn't be our creator. Man is not the creator of earth. Earth is the creator of man. That is why we stand on it. If man had created the earth, we'd be holding it up. The reason why we stand on it is because it's our everything. The earth is our everything. The earth is our God. Religion is the destruction of man, thinking that man could have created the ground. Man couldn't create that. So when we connect to the ground with our foot and then connect to the universe with our locks, we're in line, aligned. And that is what Rastafari really is, being one with everything.
Thank you for that.
And when you're being one with the universe and one with the earth, no, as I was saying, the ground created us and the universe created the ground. Mother, father, child. We are the child, the earth is our mother, and the universe is our father.
Man, that's deep, man. That's deep. Thank you for that explanation, by the way. That was probably the best I've heard with the locks. What about no meat, no alcohol? Why?
Well, no meat, no alcohol. It's because, as I said, we are an electric being. And we, as melanated people, are alkaline people. And meat is not alkaline, and liquor is not alkaline. That's why it's not good for us, because we're an alkaline being, and we need alkaline food. The meat is a poison to our structure, and the alcohol is really a poison to our structure. We might drink some wine and say, okay, we're not going so hard. It's not good for us because it's not alkaline. We're melanated people, we're alkaline people. We have to eat the food that help us to develop a higher electrical charge.
Yeah, man. So
we don't, you know, just as how we live, the animal would like to live.
That's deep, man. That's deep.
Because Rasta is about promoting life.
Mm-hmm.
All the things that promote life. Because if you're in line with the earth and the universe, you know that the earth gave us life and the universe gave the earth life. So we are here to take care of life. We're not here to destroy life, because life didn't come from us.
Thank you for that, man. Another powerful explanation. So people might say, like, all right, Ross, yeah, you're talking about the food, the locks, and no liquor. So how do you explain the marijuana? How do you explain that? Isn't that a poison?
All form of smoking is bad for the human structure. But if you were to put a little piece of the herb in your mouth, you'd get a stronger effect than if you smoke it, and then it becomes a vegetable. All form of smoking is bad for the lungs.
So as a Rasta, you don't smoke?
To tell the truth, I use it from time to time. I was like a big smoker with my chalum pipe or my chalice, you know. But as I became more aware of what I was saying and doing, I realized that there's no way you can promote a healthy lifestyle by smoking. Smoking is like a recreation. You know, it's something that you do. It's not a part of Rastafari. Smoking marijuana is not a part of Rastafari. It's just something that most Rastas do for a recreation.
I think that's fascinating, because a lot of people connect, you know, the use of marijuana with being a Rasta, you know?
Yeah, because most Rasta like to hold certain vibe, and the herb carry certain vibe that the Rasta man like to hold.
Mm.
Because in reality, you know, we're not supposed to be totally attached to things that we weren't born with. You know, there's nothing outside of you that should be, let me say now, you shouldn't be addicted to anything outside of you.
Got you. Okay.
You shouldn't be addicted to nothing, you know. All you need, you're born with it already.
So as a Rasta, as a Rastafarian, are you a part of the society, or are you separate from the society? There are Rastas that live in the woods, and there are some that are a part of, you know, the environment, the current society, and there are some that they don't use electricity, they don't do any of that stuff. Where do you fit in?
In dispensation of time, we live in a systematic way. When I say systematic, that means that everything that you see was planned. Everything that you see the people do, it was planned for them to do that. Being a Rastaman, living in this system, we're not a part of the colonial system, because every society is set by colonialism. Whether we want to get upset about it or we want to acknowledge the truth, it was set by a group of people who wanted to control the masses. We operate within the spaces. We are not of the philosophy that the system promotes. We are in society, but we're not of society. We weren't created by society as the rest of the people, you know, because the people that are created by society have a different mindset than the people that are gravitated to nature and a more holistic form of living.
Understood. All right. So for like just being a Rasta, like can anybody be a Rasta? Is it a specific race, color, creed? Like what, when looking at being a Rasta, can somebody be listening in and just be like, yo, I want to be a Rasta and just do it on their own and become a Rasta? Are there requirements? Is it, do you have to be a specific race, a specific creed, a specific?
In terms of race, there is only one race of people, and that is the human race. There's no other race of people on earth. It's one race of people, and it's the human race. To think that we are different is an illusion created by those who wish to separate us, to control us. Can anyone be Rasta? As I said, if no one uses a comb, a razor, or a brush, we will all look the same. And if there was no food place processing food, we will all be eating the same food. And if there was no shower, we would all go to the river. And if we were all living by the ocean, we would all go to the ocean. So it's not for anyone special because we're all special.
Mm, got you. So you got me thinking a little bit. I don't want to be too personal, but do you live in a house or do you...
Yeah, man, you know, as I say, no, I operate in the same space as everyone else, you know, where, we, you know, you can, how would I say this? My time of living in the bush, I spent a lot of time living in the bush, living a little, you know, self-made. And I had to learn how to build a shelter for myself because being in nature, you have to learn how to protect self. You have to learn how to house self. You have to learn how to feed self. Yes, I already learned that from nature. But to progress, to make a forward movement, there are things in society that can be utilized by a Rastaman. So we try to use the things that are usable and use the spaces that are usable to advance our way of living or to make an advancement to that which we desire.
Got it. All right. So I wanted to go into, the concept of nature as well with being, you know, a Rasta. So how is nature viewed, you know, in regards to you and the your connection to it?
Well, nature is like that word that they say God, because I don't know of man being a God, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Nature is God because nature feeds you, it clothes you, and it shelters you. So to I, nature is God.
Got you.
Nature is everything. There's nothing you can do without nature. Yes, if the ground moves from under your foot, you will cease to exist. As I said before, nature is our everything. There's nothing we can do without nature because the oxygen is nature, the ground is nature, the food that we consume is nature, the water is nature. And all the things that we use, it represents nature. It might be processed. You know, you might use a marker, which is a highlighter, and it looks like plastic, but when you really check a stack, the plastic comes from nature. So everything we do is nature. There's nothing we can do without nature. Is that like a Zoom thing with that panel? See it? Yeah, there's nothing we can do without nature. And the greater, you know, when man know thyself, when you become more aware of who you are, then you realize that you have to be closer to nature.
Mm. So, you know, I've heard a lot of like, you know, you got to know yourself, but a lot of people don't know where to start, you know, in regards to knowledge of self and learning about yourself. So in your viewpoint, where do you start?
Well, the best place to start is in the mind. You have to think about yourself, and that's what most people not doing. Most people thinking about their situation. They're thinking about the Louis Vuitton. They're thinking about the Calvin Klein. People use things to represent themselves in this time. They don't use self to represent self. And that is the difference between Rasta and the common people or the common person, you know. Rasta use what is inside to represent self. And the people in society use what they possess to represent self. They use their status to represent who they are. Mm. So the best place to start is in the mind. You have to think about yourself.
Mm. Thank you for that. I was listening to your audiobook, and there was a statement you made in the audiobook that made me a little interested to hear some further details. So you mentioned that we are greater than God. So I kind of wanted to know what you meant by that.
God, the concept of God that they have in the Bible, we're greater than that. We're far, you know, our imagination, our mind is greater than that. Because it's a blasphemy to think that a man can be God. How can a man create all of what you see? You know, just to create a tree, you know, or what it would take a man think about how to create a tree. Mm-hmm. They can't do no. And even if they started from the beginning of time, they still wouldn't be able to create it. So why would man want to take the credit? We born come see everything. How could we be God for something that we born come see? We'd be a pirate.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they say, Plymouth Rock landed on us. We didn't land on Plymouth Rock.
Mm-hmm.
Don't if you understand what I'm saying. We born and see the earth. How can man be the God of the earth? We're greater than that. And God is just a title. God is not the name of a person. It's just a title like being a Don or being a president. You know, we possess greater powers than that because God didn't make man. Man made God. But God is just G-O-D. Man made those words.
Mm. That is fascinating, man. A lot to think about today. All right. So part of what you're preaching is pretty much self-mastery, man, diving into deeper knowledge of self. You say the more you dig into yourself, the more you know of yourself. So what does that process of self-mastery look like to you, to where one is really digging and learning and developing their self-identity and self-consciousness? And you mentioned without the influence of the outside world, which I think is pretty very, very difficult, especially in these parts in the United States, man. So how do you do that, man? And what does digging into the deeper self look like?
All right, look at this. If you try to identify self based on the people around you, you're going to be who they want you to be. But if you try to make an identification of self based on what is on the inside, then you'll be your true self. A person telling you who you are and you seeing yourself for what you are and who you are is two different persons. Because there are some things that you won't tell people. And the person who's going to judge you to tell you who you are, they don't know that side of you. So even if they make a judgment, they're still short of something. But when you make a calculation of yourself, because man can't judge himself, man can only make a calculation of himself. When you make a calculation of yourself, being honest and being true to self, you paint the right picture. But to identify self among friends or family, you'd never find who you are because they don't know who they are. So self-mastery begins. And what does it look like? Self-mastery is spending time with self. Because the more time you spend with yourself is the more self gain. Self is like the gold. So the more time you spend with self, it's like mining cryptocurrency. The more time you spend doing it is the more you earn. The more time you spend with self is the more of self you earn. Self is like money to self. It's like the goal of self. Mm. It's like you're mining the better part of you. You're mining, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I see it as. Self-mastery begins with you spending time with you to find out the things that you can do, to find out the things that you can't do, to find out basically what makes you tick. To be in a crowd, it's hard to identify yourself in a crowd because you can't see yourself in a crowd. You're going to be too busy looking around. But if you're by yourself, you'll get a better picture because there's nothing on the outside to look at. So you start to look within.
Mm.
That's where self-mastery begins, within self.
I think, obviously, like we mentioned, you know, Jamaica might be a little easier to be a little secluded and to be by yourself and to spend time developing yourself on your own and not have as much outside influence. But here in the States, it's really difficult for people to not have outside influence. So for those that struggle with that, like, what advice would you give somebody that's struggling with just finding time for themselves and limiting some of the influences from the outside, whether from peers, coworkers, whatever that it may be?
Here's what you have to do. The first thing you have to do is you have to repatriate your thinking. You can be in hell and still be in Zion because what is on the outside of you don't define you. It's what you're thinking on the inside. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter where you are. Your environment shouldn't determine who you become unless it's snowing and you need to put a mink on, you know? Your environment has nothing, no control over what's inside controls what's on the outside.
Mm. So I was going to ask.
Because the idea of a car came from the inside. The idea of wearing a shoes came from the inside. Mm-hmm. And if you check what's on the inside of you, based on what you've learned from society, you don't want to throw them away.
Mm. So how do I remain pretty much myself without the influence of other people. I think that's really difficult because you might be listening to a lecture and think about like, wow, those ideas were really interesting. I might want to adapt that. Or you might be watching a movie and say like, wow, that seems interesting. I want to try it. Or you might be a part of a club, an organization, and that might influence your thinking. But just saying you should remain with your thinking. So how do you remain with your thinking without the influence of others around you?
Well, you know, as I said, if you have a glass of lemonade, mm-hmm. you put a piece of ice in the lemonade, the ice will eventually melt and merge, and you wouldn't be able to identify the ice in the cup. But if you were to put a dice, you know, people roll dice, if you were to put a dice in the cup, even though the dice is not edible, if you were to put a dice in the cup, no matter what happened, you'd still be able to identify the dice in the cup. Because the dice has an identity, and that's what we must become. We must become who we are, like our fingerprint. There's 8 billion people on the earth and no one has the same fingerprint. And that means that our personality, our attitude, our everything about us has to be like the fingerprint. You got to be unique. And when you're unique, it's easy to identify.
Got you. So within all that, within everything around the world, in your view, how does one find happiness? You think happiness is something that is a temporary thing? Can it be permanent? What's your thoughts on it?
Happiness should be something that is permanent. It can be, and it is. When you know who you are and you know your capabilities, it makes you happy naturally. Sadness comes with a doubt. Confidence comes with happiness, because if you're happy, it makes you more confident. If you have a doubt, you're not so confident. So happiness is not something that you chase. Happiness is something that you create by knowing self. Because if you're driving a car and you know how the car performs, it makes you more confident, and confidence builds happiness. You can't find happiness outside of self, you know, unless it's material happiness, financial happiness, relationship happiness. Happiness, when you know who you are and accept who you are, it naturally you get a permanent happiness. So no matter what happened in the world, you reflect on who you are and that happiness is there. So you go down the road, some people treat you bad and you have a job is treating you bad. You know, you reflect on self and like, well, that's just a job. At least I have me. You have I. You know, you don't have the job, but you have yourself. And that by having self is the greatest asset you can possess. People want house, people want car, people want shoes, people want clothes, people want everything, but they don't want themselves. So by accepting who you are and having yourself, taking back yourself from society and giving yourself identity, you know, it makes you happy, you know.
Well said. All right. We can't have a philosophical conversation, Ross, without the question of what is the meaning of life. So what have you concluded that the meaning of life is?
The meaning of life is to create a path that life can continue. So our duty as humans is to do the things to make life more feasible, because life is something that is continuous. So our duty is to prepare the path for life. We were here to make preparations for life. That is the meaning of life, because we can't create life. So we were like the caretakers, you know. We were the vanguard of life. You know, we're here to protect the path that life has to travel. That is our meaning. There's no meaning greater than that. Giving yourself to the, because remember, you know, we might take life for granted, you know, and how humans live, they live a lifestyle of killing life. That's why you have murder. That's why you have suicide. That's why they kill the animals in the Christmas, in the Thanksgiving. So many animals die, you know, in the Christmas, in the holidays, so many animals die. I mean, animals' life have meaning too, is not just us. Every life form has the same value, you know, and we are here to protect the path that life has to travel.
Well said, man. Well said. I wanted to segue just a little bit before we wrap up. There's a few things that's happening that I heard you comment on. I did see that you posted one of Dr. Umar's videos about what's happening in Jamaica with and everything and establishing businesses and things like that. So as somebody who is native of the land, what is your take on that?
Well, my take on it, you know, is, as you know, Jamaica is a colony of the Commonwealth. And it would seem as if behind the door, you know, the Chinese people are becoming the new slave masters of this world, because the people who are formerly running the world, they're stepping back because, you know, so a lot of them are getting old and the idea of how they're running the world is worn out. So they need a new way to control. So they have employed someone new, which are the Chinese. So it's not only in Jamaica, it's a worldwide effect. If you were to check the US, the United States of America, they're indebted to China as well. And there are certain parts of society that are coming that they cannot be questioned. And these actions were made and these deals were settled behind the people and beyond the people. What is happening, it's on a much bigger scale than the common person. The common person is just a slave. So the Chinese is just another pupil or another worker that have been selected to do this job, because they're coming to do the same thing that the former colonial masters had done, you know, and they're doing it maybe at a cheaper cost because they're Chinese, you know, and don't get me wrong, I don't have anything against Chinese. I don't have nothing against any nation of people, because we have different nations, but one race. Some nations, you know, they defend what is meaningful to them. And to the people of our continent, I would say that they've used us as like a plate cloth, not even the plate. We are the plate cloth. So if you drag the plate cloth off the table, everything goes to the ground. We're the table and the plate cloth. You can't use the table without the plate cloth. You know, everything spills on the plate cloth. You throw it around there, throw it around there while the dishes go in a precious place. But you can't set the table without the plate cloth. So I see the world using the people of color, melanated people, as a plate cloth. But at the same time, it's the most important part of the setting. Yeah. So the Chinese coming in is just another worker getting a job. In high places. Well, in low places, but in society, they're saying high places. Yeah. You know, they're giving colonialism a new face.
Got you. Since the Queen of England passed, a lot of talks have been had about the history and the connection between England and Jamaica. And I've heard a lot of talks about reparations and things like that that are being had about, you know, Jamaica right now. So what are your thoughts on the whole idea and concept of reparations for Jamaica?
Well, my thought is that I've never been a slave, because the history of Rastafari and Ethiopia never been conquered, never been colonized. So I don't speak from the perspective of being a slave. So I'm not really looking in a repatriation. But for the people who think that they've been a slave, I would say that it's an illusion to be pursued but never attained. Because if I take everything from you and make you weak so I can have control over you, why would I give you back everything and make you strong so you can have control over me? If there is any repatriation, it would be for all the colored people to leave America and go to Africa, or all the people to leave Jamaica and go to Africa. I think, you know, on that skit, because they want the land and they want resources on the land. So they would give the people some fiat money to say, okay, go ahead and leave. And leave all the real wealth around here. I don't see repatriation being something that is in the American Constitution. It says that there will be no repatriation paid to any group of people. So it's not even Jamaica. It's a word. Everything you see is connected right around the world. It's one string. It just looks different in different places. But it's the same shit going on all over. And it's one set of people facing the burden.
Got it. All right. Before we wrap up, I wanted to get a quick little activity in real quick called What's Your Favorite? Identifying a few of your favorite things. What is your favorite thing to grow, man? I know you grow a lot of your own food.
My favorite thing to grow is myself by my mind.
I love it. I love it. Favorite thing about making music. I know you are a musician as well.
Making music, you know, is always, you know, it's just totally submerged in being nothing and being nowhere to see what comes up, you know. That's my favorite thing in music, you know, not trying to have an idea.
Favorite thing about Jamaica?
My favorite thing about Jamaica, well, Jamaica is a word owned by the Queen with a concept behind it. I would say my favorite thing about this land that I'm on is the beauty of it, the essence of it, you know, because I think the land speaks to us. And if we only humble ourselves, we hear what the land is saying. And the land of Jamaica, there's a lot to be felt, because the greatest part of life, you can't hear it. You have to feel it. Because all we get out of life is a great feeling. And being on this land gives you a great feeling.
Mm. Well said, well said. So looking at, you know, your legacy, man, what you are trying to leave behind in this world, man, what is the legacy that you want people to know about you, the work that you're doing, and what you stand for, man?
You know, truly, a lot of our people before us out there never left a record of themselves. And I'm thinking that, you know, maybe there's going to be someone like I, maybe 1,000 years from now, 1,500 years from now, who maybe think the same thing. Because in some aspect, we're like the same people coming and coming and coming again. So maybe if I make a record of myself and I come again in 1,000 years, I'll be able to catch up where I left off.
That's, man, I'm gonna have to review that a few times, man. That is powerful, man. That is powerful. And I wholeheartedly agree with you, man. I think that a lot of us come and leave the world like almost as if like we never existed, you know, with nothing at all to say about who we were and what we did, you know?
Because they say to create wealth is to make a trust fund and leave something in it for your grandchild and your great-grand. The wealth that I'm pursuing is the wealth of self and the wealth of overstanding, you know? And 1,000 years in the sight of man is nothing, you know? That's like tomorrow in the right way of thinking. So if we're going to create knowledge, you know, we'll have to make a record. Because if you don't make a record, you won't know where you started or where you began. Mm. So I do this as a means of creating a record of that which empowers me, that which governs me, because I'm just the avatar. The words aren't mine. The inspiration is not mine. I'm just a channel through which it comes, you know?
Yes,
sir. All of what I say to you is there, it's not mine. It's just a channeling. It is basically, it's the universe, the ground, which is we call Mother Earth, and this avatar expressing. It's not Rastimulant. Rastimulant is only the ego that I give myself.
Got it. Oh, man, it was absolute pleasure having a conversation with you, man. Definitely one I got to review. Listeners definitely should review as well, just to think about a lot of the deep things that you were talking about today. Before we dip out, can you leave us with your favorite quote and what it means to you?
If we don't realize what is happening around us as it relates to the limitation of self-expression and the limitation of freedom of speech, we will be forever trapped and be a prisoner of ourselves. Meaning that there are forces working globally to depress and isolate the thoughts of self, because when man knows self, no one can have control or power over you. So I'd say to be rebellious in the way you think, not to go and pick up a weapon, not to be an enemy to your neighbor, but to be rebellious in the way you think and not to be so gullible as to accept what the institution is setting to you as a program to condition your mind and the way you think.
Powerful, man. Powerful. I know people definitely want to know where they can find you, Ross, and where they can find more of your work, whatever it is that you're doing, man. So can you share with us where people can find you?
Well, they can find me in myself. That is the first place they can find me. You know, that's where I am. I'm in myself. But where they can find me physically is, I don't even know where they can find me because I'm always moving, you know. But you know, I'm not so much of a superstar on the internet. I only do it because people say, hey, you know, sometimes we try to reach out to you and there's no link and we'd like to talk to you and ask your question. You know, so I started to do the Instagram lately. You know, I have a YouTube channel, but I don't really, you know, I'm not like that the geek that's on the YouTube, no disrespect, that's trying to make a dollar from the YouTube. I try to be organic in my approach. I'm not trying to get rich with the material of man overnight. You know, I'm more trying to absorb that which is needed to progress in this what we call a metaphysical experience that we call life, you know. So where you can find me, you can find me at Instagram at Rastimland. You know, you can find me over on YouTube as Rastimland Official. Yeah. I have a few content over there. But, you know, doing an interview is really where I get to express the untamed part of the mind. Because as I said, all that I say don't belong to me. It's just an expression through the alignment of the universe, the earth, and I. Yeah, man.
Well said, man.
Find me on the YouTube, you know. If anyone wants to link me, then, you know, you can take a link to unlink me. You can be an agent, you know. You can be an agent, you know. Because that's how it is, you know. Each one teach one, you know. Now the link is made, you know. The whole idea, you know, the idea is, you know, it's like the earth, there's a disease taking over the earth. And if we have enough, the disease is within the people and how they react and how they maneuver themselves. And it's causing a deterioration of our planet home. But you see, if enough of us know ourselves to know that we're on the path to prepare a place for life to exist more, then things will be better.
Yes, sir.
So until next time, you know, blessings, yes, yeah?
Yes, sir. We'll definitely reconnect. Listeners, thank you for listening. Definitely look into Ross's work. Check him out on YouTube. He has a lot of powerful words to say and interviews and things of that sort. And we'll definitely get him back on the program eventually. And definitely share the program and take some time to really dig into what was said today. I think we had definitely powerful dialogue in regards to philosophy and not just Rastafarian philosophy, but just life philosophy. So definitely look into it. And of course, remember, your mind is the most powerful tool in the universe. Therefore, if you can think it, you can do it. If you believe in it, you can be it. And if you fight for it, you can have it. The world is yours. This has been your host, Mr. G, and I will see you next time on Mastermind.
So every day I'm going hard. I'm talking business, bank accounts, and credit cards. And somehow we defeat the odds and making sure that no one starts.